Hello and welcome back, everyone. Today we're going to talk to Lalita, who I think we spoke to a few months back when we were in peak COVID. But I think, you know, a lot of the world has changed after that. So I thought let's not, let's go back to Lalita and ask her a few questions. So Lalita, if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, just a brief introduction again for folks.
Sure. My name is Lalita Parameswaran, and I'm an infectious disease doctor, and I'm working in New York City. Since the time of the pandemic and before that. So happy to answer any questions or clarify any concerns, and hoping to add to the knowledge in some way or the other.
Surely. Thank you, Lalita. And questions is what I have. I have quite a few. So let's get started. I think the first one is, what is a variant? I mean, you know, how do you define one? Just explain it to a layman like me, please.
Yeah. So last time, I think we had a short discussion about viruses, bacteria, mm-hmm. and things like that. So similar in the same line, viruses are extremely, extremely small organisms. They require a electron microscope most times to look at them. They often need a cell, either an insect cell or some other type of cell, and they invade the cell, use the host cell's machinery to make more copies of itself. So that's usually a virus. Now, what is a variant? A variant is when these viruses enter into the host cell, or when these viruses are going through their reproductive cycle and they're having multiple copies made, there is a change in their genetic material, and that change benefits the virus in some way. So it's sort of like the survival of the fittest to some extent. Most of the time, the mutations are helpful for the virus to spread further. Sometimes the mutations can be dead-end mutations, meaning that particular mutation does not help the virus survive and multiply in any meaningful way, so that entire line sort of dies out. So because we have a method of sequencing different types of viruses in some ways, which means we know what the genetic makeup is, we have these different types of changes from the original strain. So those are called variants. Now in nature, this is not something unique that the viruses do. So our human body goes through changes all the time. Now, all of the cells in our body go through mutations, and we have special immune cells that go and attack these mutated cells and kill them before they become cancerous cells, for example. So it is, we're all made up of cells, and you know, similarly, the virus is made up of genetic material, so it is not unusual. So the variants only become important because they are infecting us as humans. Otherwise, we wouldn't really keep track of them.
Interesting. So, I mean, to me, it almost sounds like it's like evolution in a way, right? I mean, the virus is evolving. Am I saying that right? Is it like an equivalent?
Yes, it is evolving. Okay. Some viruses evolve more than the others. So it really depends on each virus's, tendency to mutate. So coronavirus appears to have a greater tendency to mutate, especially when encountering different host cells, different, you know, there's some speculation as to this Omicron that's there right now came from another animal. It was first identified in South Africa. So we don't know yet what is it, what is the host cell that's encouraging these type of mutations. So that is coronavirus. You know, influenza is famous for mutating. We're sort of waiting around seeing when is the next major mutation coming along for influenza. There are some other types of viruses don't mutate as much. So it really depends on the kind of virus that its potential for mutation.
Interesting. So let's talk about two famous variants, Lalita. I think one is Delta and the other is Omicron, which is, I guess, running right now. So can you talk about like how infectious are they? You know, what kind of symptoms do they have, and anything else that you know from being in the space and in the front lines, Lalita?
Yeah, the Omicron appears to be a lot more infectious, meaning it is much more contagious. So if you sit in a room with someone with Omicron and you're not wearing a mask, there's a very good chance that you may come back home with an infection, especially if you're not vaccinated. Or if you're not vaccinated you're vaccinated and not with the booster. The booster does seem to help prevent some of the infections from Omicron. So it is much more contagious. It appears to cause mostly sort of what we call upper respiratory tract symptoms, meaning it seems to cause symptoms related to the nose, the throat. Lots of people have reported congestion. The predominant symptom appears to be cold-like, like heavy, you know, heavy feeling in the nose and sinuses, and also a really bad sore throat. And some people have had cough. That seems to be what Omicron is doing. However, at this point, we don't know what kind of symptoms is it giving those who are unvaccinated. Is it the same kind of symptoms, which is milder for those who are vaccinated, maybe much more severe? Is it really infecting people and bringing them to the ICU as Delta did? Anecdotally, preliminarily, it seems to be less pathogenic, meaning it appears to not make people all that sick when it does cause an infection. Where does it like to live? So Delta definitely had a capacity to infect the lung cells. Is Omicron does it have less of a capacity to go down the respiratory tract, so to go down to the lungs and the trachea, which is called the lower respiratory tract? So some of this is still under study. And there's three distinct groups of people that we're studying its effects on. So there's people who've been vaccinated with different types of vaccine and then got a booster, sometimes with the same vaccine, sometimes the different vaccine type. So that's one group. Then there are just people who got vaccinated, did not get a booster. Then there are people who are completely unvaccinated. Then there are people who are vaccinated and immunosuppressed due to whatever reason. So there's multiple groups of people. But no doubt, because it's so contagious, that the sheer number of people it's managed to infect, the number of hospitalizations is higher just because of that. And it's likely to be higher in a place that does not have high vaccination rates. So at this point, we are still waiting for more information on this variant.
Interesting. It's very interesting how variants of the same virus actually infect different parts of the body. And yeah, it's a very fascinating field. And but moving on, Lalita, I think, can we expect more variants? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's sort of the million-dollar question, right? So, like I said before, what makes a variant become predominant? It gives some sort of advantage to the virus, right? So now Delta was more pathogenic as well as more infectious than the original variant. Now we had Alpha before that, which everyone has forgotten, but it was pretty pathogenic when it came first. And it was also more infectious than the original Wuhan strain that we got. And then now there's Omicron, which is a lot more infectious, but less pathogenic from whatever we know. So somewhere along you see there's a fitness advantage. So then, is the next one going to be a lot more infectious and as dangerous, or a lot more dangerous? And that we are Hail Mary, right? Like, what do we do when that comes up? So, however, for that to happen, a lot of changes need to happen. And there has to be a fitness advantage. That virus, not only if it's mega dangerous, also has to survive. So if it's going to kill everybody, it's probably not going to survive going forward, right? It needs somebody to infect. So there has to be an advantage for living things to continue to propagate. So sometimes we've been spared the really dangerous things just because they're so dangerous, they just kill every host off, and then they have no host to survive. So for example, a parasite that comes from the fecal matter of cows, that can go into human brains and cause seizures and even death sometimes. But that's called a dead end host, because it has, human beings have no capacity to complete the reproductive cycle of that parasite. So it can only do it in its host, which is the cow. So we are an accidental host and the parasite just dies out once it enters us. So that's not a great, from the parasite's point of view, that's not a great, you know, strategy for it to continue its life cycle. So something like that. So it has to work for the virus. What works for the virus may be to our advantage sometimes, maybe not to our advantage sometimes. So we don't know yet.
I really hope, I'm seeing a little bit of positive news here. Of course, people getting infected is definitely not good, but it seems like over time, variants might be better for us, but let's see. I mean, I don't think there's anything better in an illness, but let's see how it goes.
Just one thing is, you know, this virus is a force of nature, and it's very, very powerful. Nature is very powerful. You know, we are there, but the power of nature and things that have changed because of nature changing is a lot more powerful than what we can think up and conjure up. And the only thing I can think of, which is as powerful as nature is our own human body, you know. And we're just helping by vaccination. We're not fighting anything. We're just teaching our own body to fight it. So we're using a force of nature, which is our own body, which is determined by years and centuries and millions of years of genetics to produce you as a person you are. Your genes are coming from your parents, and their genes are coming from their own parents who are in a different environment. So there's a lot of memory that's coming through generations, and you're here in a different country, and your cells have learned a different type of memory. So a lot of us, we worry about vaccination as something foreign in our body, but we're actually trying to help ourselves, the powerful immune cells that we have, to be like, hey, this is the viral protein. Recognize it and kill it when you encounter it, because you're my only hope. There's no other way to kill this virus. We don't have great drugs, you know. We have some drugs, but we don't have anything much. It's our own body that's the most powerful defense.
Yeah, it's fascinating you say that, because I think in our previous, when we had this conversation, you kind of explained vaccines like a teacher, right? It's really not doing anything for you, but teaching you how to deal with a situation should it arise. So it's amazing how simply you've explained that, Lalita. But I just want to stick to this this topic of variants. So how can I mean, is there a way for us, I mean, as society, as a race of humans, right? Is there a way for us to reduce or prevent new variants? I mean, is that even possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things we all were thinking, and by we all, I mean sort of the scientific community and the doctors and all these people who are coming on TV sometimes, we thought the less chance that this virus has to replicate, meaning, you know, the less number of human hosts that it can harbor this virus over and over again, the less chance that it will pick up these mutations that make it better. So that's why there was a lot of push for vaccination, just because if someone is not vaccinated enough, or someone does not mount a good response to this infection, the virus just sustains in them for a long time. So it's like an incomplete response. You don't eliminate the virus. The virus doesn't kill you. You're sort of in this limbo. And you keep shedding it, and the virus keeps multiplying. And as it multiplies, it learns to evade the body's immune response, because it has time to learn, right? So it's hanging out in this host. The host cells are trying to keep it under control, but they can't kill it for some reason. And the virus realizes, oh, if I make this copy, the host cell doesn't seem to be able to kill this copy, so that clone emerges, you know? Mm. So the theory is that the Omicron started somehow in that fashion, or it jumped to a different host cell and picked up mutations in a different host cell, then came back and infected a human, and then started spreading again. So we don't know the origin. We haven't been able to really figure out the origin of this original coronavirus that started this whole pandemic, right? So it's all mysterious. We don't know how to prevent variants. But in general, if you look back on history, At some point, the human race becomes has encountered this virus so many times that they just become what we call immune to it. And when that will happen for the current pandemic, we don't know, because there's an enormous level of inequity in vaccination. And does that have something to do with it? Because if enough number of humans have not encountered some form of the protein of the virus in one way or the other, either through a natural infection or through vaccination, then the capacity of the virus to replicate in that population is high. So capacity to have mutations is also high. So that's why there's a push for vaccination, because for us to emerge from this pandemic, it has to be that all of us as a race, you know, a good proportion of us has to encounter the virus, or our own immune system essentially kills it and eliminates it from our body, and then we don't worry about it anymore.
Okay, so this area of science is really fascinating, Lalita. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and you know, ask you maybe a couple of tough questions. I think the first one I have is, what is a breakthrough infection and why could it be happening?
Interesting question. So I think one of the things that I'm always struck in the pandemic, just off topic a little bit, but it's so interesting that people know the meaning of the term of breakthrough infection. So breakthrough infection, what it actually means is you have been vaccinated for a particular disease, and despite having the vaccination, you develop either a milder case or a severe case, you know, of the infection that you're not supposed to get because of the vaccine. So in COVID, a breakthrough infection means that you get COVID in spite of the fact that you may have taken, you know, the two shot series or one shot series plus or minus booster. So why it becomes relevant is because if you have a lot of breakthrough infections, then, you know, that can burden the healthcare system if they're severe. Or if they're not severe, a lot of people can suffer from some, even if it's a milder sort of infection, still loss of work, you know, all of those economic consequences can happen. So it becomes relevant in COVID because it's such a pandemic ongoing still through the world. And you know, there are a lot of breakthrough infections despite vaccination will become a big problem.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. So then let me ask you another tough question then, Lalita, is so the skeptics, right? So there's the group of vaccine skeptics. They say that, you know, breakthrough infections are proof that vaccines don't work. I mean, not that I agree with that, but as a person, as an expert in this space, what is your response to people who make this statement?
So I still want to emphasize a blanket statement such as breakthrough infections mean vaccines don't work is not accurate. So again, like the breakthrough infection falls on a spectrum. And people can have asymptomatic breakthroughs where you just got exposed to someone, you're going and getting tested, you have no symptoms, but you're PCR positive. So you may have no symptoms at all, but you're PCR positive. The next group is you have some level of symptoms. The third group is pretty bad symptoms, hospitalized, but doing okay in the hospital. And then the fourth group is severe symptoms. So the vaccines actually work pretty good to avoid the hospitalizations, avoid severe symptoms, death from a breakthrough infection. They with the Omicron variant, and I want to be very clear that it is really the new and the much more contagious variant we talked about that seemed to be giving a lot of vaccinated people breakthrough infections, which are pretty mild in nature. They have resulted in a lot of, you know, like I mentioned, economic consequences by people staying out of work. You know, the healthcare industry is affected. The restaurant industry has been affected. The transportation industry has been affected. So some of the essential workers like rest of the world, you know, even though they're vaccinated, they have had milder infections. And since it is so contagious, they have to isolate themselves and finish a isolation period. However, the vaccines do seem to protect them from severe infection. So I think when people assess the utility of a vaccine, it is important to think about what you would expect to avoid from getting a vaccination? Are you expecting absolutely no virus in your nasal cavity at all? May not be a realistic thing to expect from a vaccine, because a virus affects your nose and it takes time for your immune system to rev up to actually attack that virus in the nose and sort of eliminate it from your body. We get that kind of immunity usually from childhood vaccinations. It is a little difficult once your immune system is adult to obtain that degree of immunity, because the immune cells also age along with you. However, if you're expecting the vaccines to prevent the most important outcome, which is you get hospitalized, you get extremely ill, you get the severe COVID with your lungs are infected, then I think the vaccines are doing a really good job, especially in combination with the booster, even with the current Omicron variant. So it's inaccurate to say that the vaccines don't work. I think scientifically more accurate to say they appear to work very well for the current Omicron to avoid hospitalizations. And before this current variant, this is Omicron variant, I think they work pretty well to avoid even breakthrough infections in Delta and Alpha and other variants that were there. So, you know, that's my sort of take on it. It may not be the most, you know, best way to dispel, but scientifically, this is what it is. And they do work to avoid the more serious complications.
Thank you, Lalita. I think I really wanted someone who's an expert to kind of explain that. And, you know, given you've been in the space, I don't know anyone, at least personally, I don't know anyone who would probably explain that better than you would, Lalita. So I guess my final question to you is, you know, more of an open question rather, right? So any final advice on how we manage, or, you know, what's your advice of having been in the space? So what is that you would tell all of us, Lalita?
I think I feel optimism, which is strange for me to say, because I think the healthcare field, you know, as a whole has been through so much in the last 2 years. And either we've been working at breakneck speed to test vaccines and test therapies, or we've been on, you know, in the hospital working nonstop. Despite everything, I think I do feel optimistic, because slowly, incrementally, we have made improvements. And our current wave of Omicron, you know, did provide some natural immunity on top of your vaccine-related immunity, especially if you had a breakthrough infection, and can make your immune system a little stronger. So overall, I think we are marching along slowly but surely. And I'm hoping that COVID will become an endemic disease in the next couple of years. History has shown that that's how pandemic evolves, that enough amount of the population go through experiencing the virus until it doesn't have a good foothold. I do hope that the hesitation and skepticism related to vaccines, considering the availability of the sheer types of platforms that are available right now, there are killed vaccines available, there are mRNAs, there's adenovirus, there's just a lot of platforms available now. And people can really opt to get vaccinated from different types of vaccines. And I hope that people choose to do so, just so that we are immune to this virus as a humanity, and more of a survival of the human species level. And we need to move on with our lives. Our kids' education particularly is suffering through this pandemic. They are our future. And just like the world wars left a, you know, impact on the kids who grew up in that era, even though the pandemic is a little less comparable, however, there is a sense of isolation, anxiety, depression, lack of social contact among the kids. And I do worry the impact of the pandemic on them. So I would really focus on that going forward. And then lastly, one of the things that this pandemic has taught us is that perhaps we need to change our lifestyle a little bit. We need to party more in summer when it's warm outside, have lots of outdoor parties. And then in winter, like the olden days, you know, go back home, stay with your family, wash your hands a lot, you know, party a little less, and avoid exchanging a whole bunch of viruses. And and I go back to my original theme. I think I spoke about this before. Nature is just amazing. You know, I'm so happy to be working in a field where I come in contact with some of the most ancient organisms in the world, and in, you know, and we sort of battle with the bacteria and the viruses and realize that it's really not a battle that you can win. I'm fortunate and grateful to be in that field, but I think humanity as a whole has learned to be more humble through this process and should learn to be more humble in front of nature. So I think it's a learning process for humanity. We never imagined it. You know, in my lifetime, I hope there's not going to be another pandemic, but I don't think I can say that with certainty. I don't think anyone can say that with any certainty. So we have to be humble. We have to work together. And there is still optimism and hope. That's all I feel.
It's beautiful the way you put it. In fact, you've made so many good points in this last answer, Lalita, that it's going to be, I think I have to just rewind and play that again back to myself a few times. So it's beautiful. So with that, Lalita, I think I'd promised that this was the last question. So thanks a lot for your time and your wise words. I really hope, like the previous video that you and I had done, I just hope that this is impactful to convince people that, you know, can please go get the vaccine. I think that's, I really hope it works like it did in the past, Lalita. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. And I have to give you the disclaimer that these are all my own opinions, not of my employer. So hopefully it has been helpful. Hopefully people learn. And hopefully there are some people who get convinced after listening this to go in and join the fray, get vaccinated and protect yourself. Okay.
Thank you, Lalita.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah.